Good morning and welcome to our next edition of the Episcopal Herald podcast. We are an online magazine that strives to imagine, analyze, and articulate the future of the Episcopal Church. My name is the Reverend Beth McGill, and I am joined this morning by
Jason Sierra from the Diocese of Washington.
And we are blessed this morning to be joined by three folks who work for the Episcopal Church and are going to share with us, imagine with us, different aspects of the future of the church. So I'm going to first let them introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Reverend Ranjit Matthews. I'm an officer for global relations and networking for the Episcopal Church. My portfolio has been focusing on our Anglican partnerships in sub-Saharan Africa.
Thank you for being here.
And I'm Chuck Winder. I'm the Missioner for Social Justice and Advocacy Engagement at the Episcopal Church, and I work on social justice issues and racial justice issues.
Thank you for being here.
I'm Heidi Kim. I am the Missioner for Racial Reconciliation, and that is a lot like what it sounds like. I do work closely with my partners like Ranjit and Chuck, but it's also about sort of the personal and the community spirit of reconciliation, being reconciled to with Christ and with one another.
Thank you all again so much for your time and for sharing your thoughts with us.
So, Ranjit, we'd like to start with you. And could you open us up with just sort of saying a little bit about what the Anglican Communion is and why we as a body are called to be part of it?
Yeah, great, Jason. So the Anglican Communion is currently, as I know it, is the third largest body of Christians in the world. And as it stands, it is 38 autonomous churches of which make up the communion. And it has many different strands that are part of it. But in terms of the Protestant Episcopal Church, it's an exciting, it's exciting communion to be a part of because we get to know one another in a deeper way, and how that's been prescribed technically has is something to work on, is something to look at with, I think, ever opening eyes, just so that we just learn a lot more when we just go a little bit deeper, and I'm not sure we've done that all the time.
So what do you think are some of the barriers to deepening that relationship with church and other churches, or between various provinces. between various provinces.
Yeah, Jason, I would say, Heidi and I were just talking about it about 10 minutes ago, and I really think it's about, in some sense, how we look at missiology and how we look at mission. In 1910, there was a gathering in Edinburgh. Called the Edinburgh Missionary Conference, which really focused on, it brought together so many different Protestant organizations and churches. And one of the things that came out of it was really a sense that was a focus on Africa, in a sense that we're going to bring God to Africa. And that obviously is problematic. And that sort of understanding needs to be problematized. And so so I think that's been a dominant narrative and paradigm for many different churches, certainly within the global north, to engage with other provinces within the global south. Typically, that's often how it's gone, and that has borne some fruit, of course, but that, of course, has created a lot of collateral damage in so many different ways, not least of which is sort of the colonial dynamics that have been created, wherein which a lot of states have engaged with different missionary organizations to reify one another. And I think that, in some sense, happens even now when we engage in mission work, and I think that all comes with a sense of Christian good intention. And yet, if we really believe, in sharing the good news and in really believing and seeing the dignity in every single human being, irrespective if they are in Seattle or in Chennai or wherever, then we need to relook, these dominant patterns that we've engaged with in terms of missiology and mission. And we look at, I mean, if you look at the mission industry itself, it's a $1 billion industry. So this isn't some mission trip that that a particular parish goes on and that's off by itself, but that it's really part of a mission complex. And that sounds sort of charged, but it's really something that the church needs to be engaged in. And, you know, I do a lot of work with our partners in Africa, and, you know, we have, you know, a bishop in the Cape Coast in the internal province of Ghana, within the primacy of West Africa, the province of West Africa. And, you know, I remember going there last March to the Cape Coast, and he was the bishop coadjutor, and he said, you know, Ranjit, it's all well and good if you want to talk about partnership. And partnership in itself is a colonial word. But what does it mean, really, if we're going to engage in partnership when your mission organization has all the money? And you know, that's something for me to wrestle with. That's something that I need to wrestle with as an American, as an Episcopalian, and something that I need to bring back to our church. Because if that's, I mean, what is relationship? If we're focused on relationship, that's really the core. Or if we're focused on a paternalistic understanding of patting ourselves on the back in some sense, we need to move away from that, because that's not healthy mission, you know, and that gets reified in terms of race in so many different ways. So, you know, we need to reimagine, you know, what mission will look like in the 21st century.
Ranjit, you've said that so beautifully. Thank you for articulating that so clearly. And I think that's a perfect segue to ask Chuck, maybe, what do we do about all that has been named and identified? What would you have, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, you know, we oftentimes focus immediately on what are we going to do about something. And I think that part of what we should engage in, the activity we should engage in, is to really engage and understand in a very nuanced and deep way the things that Ranjit talked about. What does that mean? What does that look like? What does that feel like? If we're talking about, he said, relationship, we're talking about mutuality, if we're talking about sharing the work and doing the work of God, of justice and peace, of reconciliation, and the transformation that comes with that, then that's something that we can't do alone. But to really understand first, and I think sometimes part of the challenge is to rush to do. So I think one of the doing is to really to ask these questions of each other, to inwardly digest the same process that Ranjit talked about should be an individual and a collective shared process, and to go deep with that. What that does, as Ranjit said, allows a reimagination, but that reimagination becomes a generative process in which we engage. Then we don't engage in issues, because people aren't issues. We engage in dynamics. We engage in the challenges and the topics of the day as it relates to how they impact our lives and how they impact our ability and community. So it's a justice making. Creating a space, and you know, justice is considered oftentimes love and action, but that requires a resistance, I believe, to the structures and the ways of knowing the world as it exists. And so part of that is an educational piece, but also I think the things that Ranjit talked about provide the backdrop for the advocacy and engagement that's meaningful. So that if we look at love in the way of creating love and justice and peace and reconciliation from a standpoint of the personal, interpersonal, the systemic, and the cultural, we have to go deep, and it's a reiterative, generative process. And so what Heidi and I do oftentimes is support each other in, even when we don't do it together with other colleagues, is to create working networks and circles, connecting people, listening deeply, modeling that, and then helping folks be involved in action. But I think part of it is, part of the doing is to transform our understanding, and not necessarily doing that sequentially, but doing some of that as we engage in other forms of action. So I know it may sound like a dodge, because I didn't have an action plan, but it's not a dodge. I think that that's how a co-laboring requires, I believe, a co-sharing and a co-learning, and there's a learning while doing, but it really requires introspection.
You're reminding me of the phrase that I've heard before in sermons of, we were not created to be human doings, but human beings. And so I really appreciate what you all are saying in the sense of really taking a hard look and reflecting on who we are created to be as humans in God's image, and how that then impacts what we do in this world.
Right, and I'm going to throw a softball with the linkage, right? I think that one embodiment of what you just said was reflected in, is reflected in the life of Howard Thurman.
Yes.
Who, in many ways, his praxis here in the United States was informed by his travel to India and his engagement with Gandhi, who challenged him in many ways about the meaning of Christianity in his context. And also the particularities of his context and what it meant to be in the United States. And then also challenged him to look deeply at the possibilities of, you know, nonviolent action as a form of spiritual resistance. So the being and the doing and the inward reflection and going deep, he connected and integrated. So he wasn't just a mystic. But the chance to go internal and inward is very helpful. And that's something that Heidi, in our early conversations when we came on board, I heard her sing that song. It transformed, I added some notes. I'm not a musician. She's a professional. But it may be a bad metaphor. But it added that to mind about the spiritual practice of justice making. The spiritual practice of justice making and the spiritual dynamic of the spiritual aspects of anti-oppression, anti-racism.
Thank you, Chuck. And maybe this is a good time to segue to Heidi and to ask you, what are some of the ways we might wade more deeply into this work?
Well, I think it's been very interesting to be here at General Convention and to see resolutions about racial justice coming from very different quarters. And I kind of will joke with it's as though, many people figured out last week after 9 people died in Charleston that racism is still an issue. And so they were going to come in and solve the problem. And we are a problem-solving church. We are the human-doing church. And there's been a lot of sort of rhetoric around, I don't want to do any more research. I want to take action, and I'm not going to vote for a resolution until it takes action. And my response has been, the doctrine of discovery was action without research.
Sure.
Indigenous boarding schools were action without research, and we are now in the business of repudiating those actions that we have taken as a church. And so I think it is very important to do this kind of this inward reflection. We had a screening of a documentary about Howard Thurman earlier in the convention. And one of the things that I talked about is Howard Thurman's efforts to reclaim Jesus from Christianity. And I think that it's something that we need to do. And he really liked the spiritual, give me Jesus. You can have all this world, give me Jesus. So there's back to that song. When I talk to folks who are having difficulty trying to get their diocese or their parish to have a conversation about racial reconciliation, they'll say, they just don't want to do the anti-racism training. They don't think they need it because they're not racists. And, I would frame the question a little bit differently, especially given this colonial history of our church. I would say, what is your heart's desire for kingdom building? What is your heart's desire for being the body of Christ with one another? And if you answer that question honestly, then you can see all of the ways that the sin of racism is an obstacle to being able to live into that desire to be the body of Christ with one another. So it's just it's a slightly different focus. But at the same time, as we're having those conversations, as people are in a lot of different places where you wouldn't expect it, engaging in storytelling and holy listening with one another, there's still this baggage that comes with it of being this colonial church. So I've had some conversations with folks throughout the church, and they'll say, we're doing wonderful reconciliation work. The problem is we still have all these ethnic parishes, and they don't want to be integrated. And so, you know, for me, I'm thinking, I attend St. Mark's Cathedral in Seattle, Washington, which you could very easily argue is an ethnic parish. It's in the Capitol Hill neighborhood of Seattle. It's very high church. I sing in the choir there. It's a very high Anglican tradition. That's an ethnic parish. But nobody is telling us, you know, you need to change fundamentally who you are and go out and you know, and sort of recruit more members. Or some people will. But, you know, that to me is not kingdom building. That's taking inventory. You know, that's commodifying who we are as a church and who we are as a people. So, you know, it's okay for these, you know, historic white churches to sort of stay exactly the same. And a lot of them are saying, we need more people of color. And it's not really about what that will do to help us grow as a church. It's about, you know, so that we can feel better about how inclusive we are. And that somehow if there are more brown people in the pews next to us, that will demonstrate that we're not racists. And again, you know, as my colleagues have so eloquently said, it has to be a much deeper kind of inward journey about really trying to understand, you know, what does it mean to be the body of Christ with one another?
It's all about relationship.
One would hope, but right relationship.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's about being in right relationship. And that's very, very hard work. And it takes a lot of deep internal work before, you know, and it takes, this is one of my punchlines that I often say, being in right relationship has to be more important than being right. So as we are, as a church, debating resolutions about marriage equality, for example, can we be in fellowship and in right relationship with one another when we fundamentally disagree on the things that are so deeply important to who we see ourselves are, how we see ourselves as Christians? And my hope is that, yes, that we will still be able to be reconciled to one another even when we disagree deeply, fundamentally, about the things that which, you know, that are so important to our personal identities as, you know, as individuals, as Christians, as members of the church.
Thank you.
Yeah, so as we engage in this work of going deeper, of telling the stories, of actually engaging in relationship with each other, and of really naming some of the barriers that exist within our community, within our church, within our communities, over the next 5-10 years, I'd like to hear from each of you just a little bit about what your hopes are for the future, how you think that will transform the church to be a different body, perhaps a more accurate representation of Christ. What is that transformation that you hope for?
I've had the good fortune of being able to spend quite a bit of time with the Young Adult Festival, and I also have had some time with some of the youth and the official youth presence. And it's kind of a joke now about, you know, you are the future of our church. And I even did my sort of church lady impression of, you know, it's so great that you're here. Will you go serve punch? You can't have my spot on the vestry because that's my spot, but you're the future of the church. And, you know, we're all just saying, no, you are the leadership of the church right now. And part of why I think it's so important for my ministry to be engaged with youth and young adults is that that's where the fresh creative ideas are coming from. And they have, you know, come to political and spiritual consciousness in a very different kind of world than the one that I grew up in. And it's really up to me to listen and learn and to get out of their way. And that's where I put a lot of my hope and my focus, I think. It's been very life-giving for me. Being at General Convention can be very hard. It's I'm an extrovert, and this many people is really challenging. But being with those young folks has just fed me in really deep and lasting ways that I can't even really adequately describe. Thank you.
Yeah. Much of our polity, which I celebrate, I often have to, reckon with when I travel, and that'll certainly be true of this general convention, and for which I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the work that we do, and making it translate is difficult work sometimes, and it often means much more listening in a charged way, which is sometimes difficult. But I guess my hope, and I think theology can often seem as sort of reactive, and what I'm hopeful for is creating spaces where it's not reactive, but being proactive around the common areas of mission. And it always comes to me that where the Archbishop of Congo, Archbishop Isingoma, would say to many of us who travel there, come and be. Just come and be with us. The Bishop of Buye in the province of Burundi said, nothing else. I saw him 3 weeks ago in Richmond. And he said, just to know that people are there with them. The province of Burundi is going through an incredible amount of turmoil right now. And to know that the province of the Episcopal Church is there in solidarity more than anything, in prayer. It means a whole lot, but also just going there for not anything other than just a being with, a walking with. And, the reality is that it costs money, right? It costs money to go. And what does it mean in terms of, a reciprocity of both of us coming and going and receiving each other? And those are hard questions. But, I hope that, on every side, in Canada or wherever, that there'd be a deeper wish for continuing in Daba, for continuing to ask hard questions of ourselves, and having that trust to ask those hard questions and to really go deeper within it. And I think that sometimes there are forces on different sides that don't want that to happen, or we'll fill a vacuum, or we aren't. And my hope as a global relations officer, particularly respect to Africa, is that we continue to create places where we can trust one another and listen more deeply.
Thank you.
So, I think there's a lot of conversation about post-Christendom and shrinking and dying. I think we're in a post-colonial space, and in time we're also in a the postmodern world. I believe that the church has something to say, and the gospel has something to say, and we have something to do in the sense of being, if we follow the Jesus way, if we look at the Missio Dei, the counter-narrative, the resisting the empire aspect, we can help to be a space where not only do we reimagine the possibilities of new ways of being and doing in the world that inform and shape our institutional life beyond the church, but also we can be a space in a place where those tensions and dynamics are as something new is emerging. All the systems are collapsing. New things are emerging. Folks are anxious. In these times, all kinds of wars and conflict, forms of oppression are multiplied in a number of various ways. If we do what we say that we're about, if we hold that space where questions can be asked, but also where people can come with the anxiety, grapple what it means to interact differently, then I think the church can be what it is called to be in terms of being a space of building a beloved community here on earth. When I was in law school in previous time, I ran into this book in the stacks, this old book that talked about all institutions of government and business were shaped and formed by two institutions, you know, for a long time, right? The church and the military. Most business models were shaped by those two things, most of government. I believe as something new is happening and systems are collapsing in ways that they should and things are changing, my hope is that we can be a space and place of reimagining what type of transformation, what type of being, how we can relate to one another differently. And that does require us grappling with racism and sexism and patriarchy, but it also requires us reimagining what it means to be human, what it means to relate to one another. And my hope is that we don't dodge grappling with what that means, not only for ourselves, but how we can be a space where people can come and deal with the anxiety that's caused by this post-colonial, post-modern space. If we can at least do that, if we don't want to help shape and be engaged in dialogue with the emergence, and what I like to say, transmergence, right? The transformation into something new of other institutions, we can at least be a place where we can hold that and meet and help people to reimagine how we can exist differently in the world. That's my hope. It's not my job title, but you asked what is my hope, and I would like to work with my colleagues and folks in the church to help be that space.
I just want to thank you all. After being here for over a week, I think we can get caught up on it's all about us and it's all about me. And you all have given me great hope for building the kingdom and for doing that work in the Episcopal Church and the Anglican Communion. So I'm so grateful to have you working on our behalf. And I'm so grateful for the depth and deeply spiritual nature of the work you're doing. So thank you so much for your time and for sharing your thoughts with us today. We are the Episcopal Herald. You can find us at episcopalherald.com or on Facebook or Twitter at Episcopal Herald. And a special thanks to Chase Carl, who does our music. Until next time, keep the faith.